Well, as I was looking at our texts for this Sunday, something struck me, sort of common to all human beings. At least I think it's common to all human beings, at least all the ones I've ever met, and that's that we want answers. We hate uncertainty as people, don't we? And we do anything we can to make it go away. That's where superstitions come from, as much as anything. And of course, none of us are superstitious. I know that perfectly well. But hasn't it ever crossed your mind that if I wear that shirt again, my team will win? Or something like that? Well, whoever was supposed to wear their shirt didn't yesterday, that's for sure. Whatever superstitions Saskatchewan Roughriders fans might have had obviously failed them. 31-0 is about as bad as it gets these days. But we want answers. And not only do we want answers, we want easy answers. We want them quick and fast and short to the point. We want answers to all of our questions. What are our questions about morality and ethics? Or arithmetic, politics, physics, all of those things. We want answers. We want to know what the answer is. Well, there's a problem with that. We can want answers all we like, and we can want them now all we like, but lots of the questions that we have don't really have easy answers. Now, arithmetic does. 2 and 2 is 4. It always will be. That's pretty quick. Physics apparently has answers. I don't know. I didn't really do very well in physics. I was quite sure I'd drop the class, but apparently I didn't do the right paperwork, so I have a 10% on my high school transcript, which gives you one more bit of evidence why I never actually finished high school. What about things that aren't like that? That aren't arithmetic, but are critically important? Do we still want answers there? Yes, we do. We want to know why things go wrong. We want to know what we should do next, and not the easy things. It's easy to decide when you wake up in the morning, you know, am I going to go to work or am I going to go rob a bank? I mean, that's not a question that is a hard one to answer. But there are lots of other questions that are difficult, and they get more and more difficult, it seems, the more complex they are. The kinds of questions that Job is asking are some really interesting questions with no easy answers whatsoever. The whole book of Job, if you will, is one big question. But the parts that were read for us today, the questions aren't quite as obvious as they sometimes are. But when we hear Job saying, "If only I knew where to find him," talking about God, "Would he oppose me with great power?" talking about God. "If I go to the east, he's not there. If I go to the west, he's not there." That's this translation. Basically, I go everywhere, I can't find God. These are all about God. And those are all questions that have no easy answer. Some people tell you they don't have any answer at all, but I don't think it's quite that far. They're just not easy. And what is Job actually asking? Where is God when things aren't going the way they should? The way I want them to. And that's a question that we all ask that frequently has no easy answer. We ask this question when people that we know and love die too soon. This is the kind of question we ask at the other end of life when we're just sort of starting out and the array of good opportunities and good possibilities before us seems endless and we don't know what to choose. We don't know which one would be best. We're struck with a diagnosis we don't want, whatever it might be. And we ask these questions, where is God? And sometimes, just like Job, we look everywhere, and he's not there. What does that mean? Does it mean that God actually isn't there? No. Does it mean that there will never be an answer to this question? No. But it does mean that we don't have an answer now. So what do we do about that? We are the kind of people who want answers so much that we'll create answers where there aren't any. Hang around anybody who's in that early stages of adolescence and is interested in another human being. And their ability to apply answers to what we would consider random behaviors about whether that person likes them or not is really quite extraordinary, isn't it? If you think back to that, maybe you think back to your own. Oh, they wore that shirt. That means they like me. Well, the question isn't, what kind of shirt did they wear? The question is, do they like me? That's a hard question. It doesn't always have easy answers. But we want them, and so we'll create them somewhere. And so what people frequently do when they ask questions of God and they don't get the answer they like, or they don't seem to get any answer at all, is they say, well, there is no God. Or they say, God doesn't care about me. These aren't true. But what do? It's not easy to have unanswered questions. It's not easy to have unanswered questions about simple things, let alone difficult ones. So what do we do? How do we deal with this? Well, we look at Job, and Job is a poem as much as anything. Like, don't go to Job for the day-to-day living experience of somebody like several thousand years ago. That's not its intention. Job is a poetic discussion, consideration of what it means to follow God and who God is and a bunch of other things as well. So what does Job do? Job has these unanswered questions. Job is about as close to the end of your rope as you can be and still be alive. Everything that matters has been taken from him. His wife, depending on the translation you read, says either bless God or curse God and die, because there's no other point. Job says, no, I'm not going to do that. Job thinks, I'm going to go to God and I'm going to say, this is what's happening. Explain to me how this is right. Explain to me how I deserve this. And Job's friends come along and just fall right into this whole trap of saying, well, there has to be a reason. There has to be a reason that we can easily understand. And we see this ourselves. Perhaps we do it ourselves. A catastrophe happens. And someone probably and unfortunately will tell you, well, it's because of somebody's sin. Your baby died because you didn't pray enough is not the thing anybody needs to hear or should ever hear. But it's an answer. And we are so desperate for an answer, we'll come up with something, no matter how inadequate and wrong it is. Job's friends come and give him page after page of inadequate answers, saying, of course, it's because of you. You did these things. And we, because we've got that prologue, and we know what's going on, once again, in this poetic kind of thing, we know what's going on. We know his friends don't know what they're talking about. But so does Job. But when Job comes to the end of this rope, and when Job decides that he isn't going to just curse or bless God and die, he says, I want to talk to God. I want to talk to God and figure this out, but there's no answer. And so when we get to the end of the passage that we read, in this translation it says, God has made my heart faint, the Almighty has terrified me. Even in God's absence, even in God's non-answer, it terrifies Job. He says, yet I am not silenced by the darkness, by the thick darkness that covers my face. So what does Job do when he gets no answer to his questions? Is he keeps asking. Because here we are at this crossroads for Job. He can just give up. Strong implication is that he should just give up and kill himself, which is certainly a solution, not a good one ever. Or he can keep asking. Even in the face of what appears to him to be a God who isn't, like, not only is God not there, God is hiding from him. He says, I will keep asking. Even in the midst of this, I'm not going to be so terrified that I stop asking those questions. Even without answers. Well, what about us? How many of us have questions that aren't answered yet? Because that's the key. Really. When we ask God for answers, I am quite willing to say, without qualification, that God will answer. But I won't say when. And I certainly won't say how. There are lots of questions I've been asking God off and on for decades. I don't have an answer yet. And I suspect each of you has at least one, probably more than one. And if we're not careful, we'll fall into this idea that because we haven't got the answer we want, we haven't got it yet, that we'll never get it, or that God doesn't care, or something else. But is it not possible? And this is just one way to think of it. When I was 15, there were a whole bunch of things I didn't understand at all. When I got an answer, it didn't make any sense to me. That now does. Well, why? Well, there's a bunch of things. There's developmental brain issues going on there. There's almost nothing in the world more black and white than someone between the ages of 15 and 25. Like, that's really where this desire for a quick, easy answer, either or, really kicks in. And for anybody who's spent any time listening to me, you know how leery I am of either or kinds of questions. That dualism that is always, everything breaks into two things. But when we're young, that's the only way we think. When we're young, it's really hard for us to see nuance, to see gray. Everything has to be black and white for us. But as we get older, we realize that not everything is black and white, and in fact, lots of things aren't. And the older I get, the fewer things I find that are black and white. So now I can live with this ambiguity of what it means to be a human being that drove me crazy when I was younger. You know, how could my dad, who knew so much about this, be so dumb about that? And the older I get to realize, well, he wasn't dumb about very much. He was a fallen human being like me. There's a few things he had that I still have no idea how he ever thought that made sense. But most of those things back then, I now say, yeah, of course that's the way it is. It's never as simple as either or when you're dealing with human interaction. And as I get older, I understand that more. So in a very real sense, I have answers now to questions that I didn't have when I was younger. And I think it's similar in our relationship to God in these unanswerable questions. Will we have an answer here? I'm not sure. I don't think so for some of these things. I don't think we'll understand fully the answers that God gives us to some of these ultimately profound questions until we're with God in a way that we aren't now. Which frustrates me, by the way, and you're allowed to be frustrated too. I still want answers. The fact that I understand that I won't always get them doesn't mean I want them any less. But what do we do? Well, we have a benefit that Job did not. We have a new experience of God that Job didn't. Now, Job, whether Job was an actual historical character or not is really irrelevant. At that point, Jesus wasn't in the picture the same way Jesus is now. Jesus was still there. The Trinity's been there since the beginning of everything and before. But Jesus hadn't come in the same way. God hadn't come in the same way to Job and the people of that time. And so Job said, I am terrified, but I'm not going to hide forever. I'm going to keep asking these questions. And we can do that. But we have a better way of thinking of things. And that's where Hebrews comes in. Depending on the day, Job is my favorite book in the Old Testament, which I never would have thought 30 years ago. And just about every day, Hebrews is my favorite book in the New Testament. So what do we do? Well, let's drop down to the end of the reading. And I'm in the New International Version, so it's similar to what we had read for us. A little bit different, but the same idea for certain. We're reminded that we don't have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way just as we are, yet was without sin. And that's sort of the preamble to what really makes the difference. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. See, Job continued to approach God, but there isn't a whole lot of throne of grace and there isn't a lot of mercy in there that we see. It's a different experience for Job, not a different God, different experience, different time, different all of those things. Job continued to go to God, and so do we, but we do it from a different perspective. We're not terrified by God because we have a different kind of revelation now. I'll say it again. It's not a different God, but it's different people. Not better, not worse, different. When we are faced with the same kind of darkness that Job, responding to one of his so-called friends, says covers him entirely so he can't see anything, when we have this kind of darkness, this kind of uncertainty, this kind of worry about the future, we don't screw up our courage and go someplace that we're frightened. Rather, we go to the throne of grace. And we go there with confidence. And that's where we receive mercy and find the grace to help us in our time of need. Well, what might these times of need be? Well, sometimes it's obvious we need health, and sometimes we miraculously get it. Sometimes we get it through the agency of doctors and medicine. Sometimes we get that kind of help. Sometimes we get a different kind of help. And that's the kind of help that lets me keep going, even when I don't get the answers I want at all. I've had all kinds of people point out to me the good things that happened because my first daughter died. Very seldom makes me feel better. I'll never be okay with that. And I don't have to be. I ask God every once in a while, less frequently now, but I ask God why. And he's never told me why. But as I've come again and again to that throne of grace, with confidence, what have I got? I've gotten mercy. God has never told me to stop asking. He's never told me to shut up. Never even alluded to the fact that I should stop. I receive mercy, and I find the grace to help me in my time of need. And I keep going. Do I have an answer to that question yet? Nope, I don't. Will I ever? I'm not sure. I'm not going to limit God. But it's been a long time, and I haven't got one so far. The lack of answer isn't what sort of keeps me awake. The question still keeps me awake, but the lack of answer doesn't. Because what do I get? Mercy and grace to help me in my time of need. And that grace, in my case, shows up as a confidence in a loving God who knows more than I do, who one day will explain this to me in a way that makes sense. And that's what I need. That's what I need, and that's what I get. It's not what I want. Had a fascinating experience when realizing once again how frequently we need to listen more carefully to the very young people in our lives. I was getting Neela ready for school, and we leave the house before she does to catch her bus. She's 12, it's not a problem. So I asked, is there anything you need before you go to help her with lunch or something? She said, no, I don't mean. I said, what about $1 million? She said, well, I don't need $1 million. I want $1 million, but I don't need $1 million. I said, I know grown-ups who haven't figured that one out yet. I want an answer. I really do. I want to know why. But I get what I need when I take that to God. The comfort that I need that comes only from the Holy Spirit, because no human being can ever provide what I need when I ask that question. But God can and does. It's an answer, not the answer. But it's the answer I need. We'll never stop wanting answers, and we don't have to. Hopefully we'll never stop asking the questions, because we don't have to stop that either. But we need to remember that when we come to this throne of grace with the confidence that we have, we're going to get the mercy and grace that we need, even if it's not the answer we want. Amen.